Hello and welcome to the Rogers Brief for December 9th, 2023. I'm Adam Rogers. Thank you for watching and thank you for listening. And mention again, I appreciate people giving feedback and sharing the videos and such like that. Always helpful to spread the word around and grow the audience and get some good feedback, which is always nice. This week might be a little bit shorter. I'm going to focus on three main stories, one being this week in Ottawa. There was a release from the Commission on Foreign Interference talking about standing, which parties are going to have standing. Kind of went under the radar a little bit, but there's some interesting distinctions in who has been given standing, and so I think I'm going to make some comments on that. Following up on a story I did last week on Judge Bejean and a rough Court of Appeal decision, talking about some of his comments and decisions during a case out of Truro. Well, he's now been made subject of a complaint to the Nova Scotia Judicial Committee. And so I'll talk about that a little bit and what I think is going to take place there. And finally, there's case will certainly be of interest to those around Anakin-ish, but throughout Nova Scotia as well, on the potential for a municipal amalgamation. And there's a group opposing the efforts from the Anakin-ish Town and Council, Town and County Councils to amalgamate. Decision came out late this week on that, so I'll finish off with that. Just a programming note in a sort, we're going to be on tomorrow night with Paul Palango and Jordan Bonaparte on Jordan's show, the Sunday Night Show, which congratulations to Jordan, is named Coast Magazine out of Halifax, named it the best Halifax podcast. So big congratulations to Jordan there. Nice to be a small part of that. Actually, something I was just before I started doing getting ready for this, I was reading an employment case out of British Columbia. So a little warning to folks. This guy had been, he was Russian born, which is relevant to one of his excuses, I guess. An accountant at a big pulp and paper company out there was recording all conversations he was having with management and HR, having to do with bonuses, financial arrangements, all of those things. He said it was in part to help him improve his English and get rid of his accent. But what it really was, as it turned out, was him trying to catch somebody saying something inappropriate that he could use in a future claim. Anyway, he was being fired because he was, people just didn't like the way he was focused on management bonuses, felt he was entitled to things that he may not have been. And so they were going to get rid of him. And when you do that, you can fire anybody. You just have to give them the appropriate notice. But in his defense, he raised, hey, I've recorded all these conversations, and here's what they reveal. And so then the company turned around and says, well, now that you've told us that you've recorded all these conversations, we are now firing you for cause without any compensation because you're an untrustworthy employee who has been violating people's confidentiality. They had some confidentiality clauses in their employment, certainly as you would in the financial side of a company, and he violated those in their view by recording all these conversations and using them for other purposes. So just a little warning there about people that think they can record all conversations. Now, if you're recording conversations in order to prove prove something that's going on and that's an ongoing situation and you're just trying to gather evidence, that's a different story. That was made clear by the court in that case. Okay, let's get into this week's stuff. The Committee on Foreign Interference, this is the Foreign Interference Inquiry. It's taking place in Ottawa. Due to report an interim report in February of 2024 with their final report in December of 2024. This is the inquiry into alleged Chinese government interference, attempts to influence different MPs, and Russian foreign interference as well. So the inquiry was given standing to different individuals, and there were many people that applied, and political parties, other entities. So there was a distinction. So some people just weren't granted standing if they didn't have anything relevant to add, or that would be more appropriate as witnesses and not as parties to it. So there's two. There's party status, and then there's intervener status. Party status gives you access to all the documents, and intervener status gives you only access to what's been made an exhibit. Okay, so you don't see everything as an intervener. You only see what's been made an exhibit in the inquiry. Parties get to question all the witnesses. Interveners get to make submissions. So you don't get to cross-examine any of the potential witnesses. So there's been a few individuals, Han Dong, an MP who was one of the targets, who was either the target of interference or he was being helped by the interference is the allegation, I think. Michael Chan, who was a former Ontario member of provincial parliament, now the deputy mayor in Markham, also given standing. Aaron O'Toole, former leader of the Conservative Party, given intervener status. And then there was a Senator Wu from British Columbia, also given intervener status. The big thing, though, is the political parties. So the Conservatives and the NDP were both requesting party status. So in other words, they'd be able to access all of the documents, not just the exhibits, and also be able to question witnesses. They were rejected in that request, both of them. The comment was that it is undesirable to use public inquiries as a way to advance political parties' positions. But every public inquiry is unique, and it would be inappropriate not to at least grant standing. Well, cold comfort in a way. I think both parties have reasons to be upset. I mean, grant them the standing. So the big issue to me is that they're not getting access to all of the documents, and there may be questions that they would like to ask witnesses, of course, too, but the documents may be more important. If you don't know what is not made an exhibit, then it's hard to assess how well the commission has done. So the government has standing, the Elections Canada elections officials have standings. There was a coalition of human rights groups that got full standing, a coalition of eight different groups. There was a Russian-Canadian Democratic Alliance given standing essentially because they were the only organization that indicated that they were going to focus on the Russian aspect of it. The Ukrainian-Canadian Congress also got standing. So, interesting to see. I mean, yes, undesirable to use public inquiries to advance political parties' positions. Well, guess what? That's exactly what's going to happen, regardless of whether they've been granted standing. I guess they don't want it to descend into, political parties seeking clickbait kind of clips to post on social media, as they seem to often do in committee hearings and question period and stuff in the in Parliament. But I think there'll be some questions as to the legitimacy if it comes out that there's many more documents that haven't been made exhibits and that are still being kept secret. So we'll keep an eye on that as it unfolds. The hearings, I think, should start soon after Christmas. All right, second one. I talked about this last week with Judge Alain Bégin, provincial court judge in Truro. Decision from like a year and a half ago, it was a while ago, went to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal just blasted Judge Bégin for making comments before the Crown and Defense had made their submissions. All the evidence was in, and they were basically asking Judge Bégin, is there anywhere you'd like us to focus our closing submissions? And which is not unusual, more common in a civil claim where all of the protections and rights, the presumption of innocence, all these things aren't quite so, well, they're not in place in a civil case. So the concern from the Court of Appeal was that Judge Bejin two things. One, that he made some comments prior to the submissions of counsel about what he was thinking about the case, including some pretty pointed comments to the accused. You know, basically that he pretty much, he was finding him guilty on something. It was a sexual offense, allegations of multiple sexual offenses against his stepdaughter. Pretty clear from review of the decision that it's probably the correct decision from Judge Bejin to find the guy guilty. But what the Court of Appeal didn't like was that he commented in advance of the closing arguments and so was, you know, showing that he was biased in some way or had already made up his mind before everything was finished. Okay. But the second problem was Judge Bejin asserted to the Court of Appeal and the Crown that was handling it that those comments were off the record and shouldn't be included, which, you know, he made an argument, it was rejected, the audio was provided to the Court of Appeal and made up part of the decision. So that's all fine. That's a rough week for Judge Bejin. He has a bad Court of Appeal decision, but it didn't end there. This week, the Chief Judge of the Provincial Court, Perry Borden, initiated of his own volition. There was no complaint made by any of the parties, by the accused, by anybody else. Chief Judge Borden initiated this complaint himself, as he's entitled to do under the provincial judge's legislation. So now, not only, I guess, in a sense, has Judge Borden turned the spotlight on to Judge Bejin in a bigger way, but he's also, I think, turned it a little bit on himself. So Judge Borden was named a judge in 2020, graduated from Dal Law in 2002, a couple of years before me. Judge since 2020, he was a Crown prosecutor prior to that. Judge Bejin, for interest's sake, was a defense lawyer and civil litigator. Chief Judge, Judge Borden has been the Chief Judge since August 24th of this year, for a couple of months. And so this is pretty dramatic in my mind too. And I've talked to quite a few lawyers this week about this. And lawyers are certainly quite supportive of Judge Bejin from what I can tell. A breath of fresh air was one of the comments. When you go into Judge Bejin's court, you know, he gets to the point. He doesn't waste time. He doesn't, you know, dawdle around on things. He makes things happen and he's a good judge. He has sound, you know, sound judgment. So what happens now? Is it Chief Judge Borden trying to make a name for himself or what? What's going on here? Or is it legitimate? We'll see, I guess, as the process unfolds. But he only references the decision itself, and the decision just says basically, you know, he shouldn't have made those comments prior to the closing arguments and shouldn't have been trying to keep those transcripts from being released. Okay, well, that's all been publicly exposed, and so what's going to happen? So are they trying to, you know, censure Judge Bejin, have him removed from the bench for this? Not a chance, I wouldn't think. I would think that is highly unlikely, but it is one of the possible remedies under the legislation. So we'll see. He is still sitting as a judge, so nobody has suggested that this has prevented him from being able to execute his duties in the meantime, although I'm sure it's quite distracting. What happens now is a committee is set up. By the way, the Chief Justice of the province, Chief Justice Michael Wood from the Court of Appeal, is supposed to be the chair of this committee that reviews the situation. He's recused himself, hasn't said why. Must know Judge Bejin personally, would be my suspicion. So it's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Deborah Smith, who's going to chair. There will be another provincial court judge on the committee, a lawyer, and a public representative. So that's who will be examining the conduct of Judge Bejin. We'll be keeping an eye on that, although the process from here on in, unless there's a full-blown hearing or whatever, will be fairly out of the public eye until some decision is made, probably. Unless, like I say, there's hard to know why there would be a public hearing in this, in a sense, because everything is already laid out in the open, but one never knows. Okay, last thing I want to talk about, this decision of the Supreme Court, Justice Tim Gabriel, on the Anakinish Town and County consolidation, amalgamation situation. So, a while ago, it's got to be at least a year, no, more than a year ago now, I guess, the two councils, the town council, county council, voted narrowly, to ask the provincial government to enact special legislation to amalgamate the two municipalities. The town is completely within the county. There was a citizens group that got organized and have some meetings, raised some money, and has opposed this effort and took the town and county to court over the request. I thought this was premature on their part because, as I said before, I've spoken about this situation before, the motions that the town and county passed were to ask the province to do something, ask the province to enact special legislation. Well, you can ask somebody to do anything. They don't have to do it. And, well, anyway, that's exactly what Justice Gabriel decided in the end, that that was the outcome. So, back up. What were the citizens group arguments? Their main are, all right, there's two methods in the Municipal Government Act, in the legislation that governs municipalities, on how to amalgamate. One is that you request through the Utilities and Review Board that you wish to explore it. They order studies, engineering studies, financial studies, all these things on how that would work out afterwards. You know, if there's water utilities involved, which there would be in this case with Anakinish, how would that all materialize? Would it save money? Would it be efficient? So there's studies done, and then there's a recommendation, then it either happens or doesn't. The other process in the Municipal Government Act is a fairly political process and would require a plebiscite, a vote of the citizens, in order for it to happen. Which, by the way, happened close to 20 years ago, and they didn't amalgamate at that point. So there was a fairly close results. So what the judge said is, Justice Gabriel said correctly, was that the municipalities here just made a request to the provincial government to enact special legislation. And that, in fact, so the citizens say, well, you can't do that. There's two ways to amalgamate. You can't just invent a third way. Well, Justice Gabriel says, actually, you can do whatever you like in that sense. You can ask the province to do something, and they don't have to do it. And in this case, in fact, nothing has been set in motion, and nothing was necessarily set in motion by the request having been made. So the province might just, as they have so far, ignore the request. Or if they do take on the request, they might propose legislation, the government might, and the provincial legislature might refuse to pass the legislation. So there's all kinds of things that might happen, but the whole thing might not happen. By the way, Justice Gabriel, near the end of the decision, made a comment that, in fact, you know, whatever the province might do might involve them, as part of their legislation or their initiative, ordering a plebiscite. So that was, it was interesting that he mentioned that. I mean, it was, he didn't say if they should, and he made a special comment that this is, you know, this is a political situation, and, you know, a court shouldn't comment as to whether that's what should happen as part of it. Whatever legislation the province may propose, if any. And so, but it was interesting, I thought, that he noted that at all, that the province might, in fact, do that. So, would certainly give the coalition, the Citizens Coalition, some idea of what to say to the province if the province starts considering enacting such legislation. But we'll see. We'll see how that unfolds. I saw a comment in the CBC article on it that Now the town and county councils kind of expect that the province will bring forward legislation in the spring session of the legislature and enact that kind of legislation to amalgamate. So we'll see how that unfolds as time goes on. Okay, so those are the three cases that I wanted to cover this week. I'll be back next week with another Rogers Brief, and I'll be on tomorrow night with Jordan and Paul to talk about lots of other interesting articles and issues that are on the go. I've been getting emails from Jordan and Paul last few days, so this should be a good show tomorrow night. So look forward to that, and look forward to seeing you again all next week. Thanks again for watching, and thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.